Good morning. Good afternoon. Greetings. Thank you for being here today to for this discussion. And I wanted to let you know a couple of things about this as we get started. Usually we have an introduction, and I confess I'm confused about whether or not I'm supposed to do the introduction. So I'll just give you my version of an introduction, which is please stay muted all the time that you're not actually the person speaking, or else I will do my teeth gritted, please mute yourself. And the only other thing about it is that I would like for us to be able to be in conversation with as many people as possible with this. So if we could really stay focused on exactly what I'm bringing up to talk about, that would be really helpful. All right. So here's what I've been seeing as I've looked at this. I hope everybody had a chance to listen to the recording so that you're really dialed into this. But so in this practice, I'll just say I keep repeating the principles of the practice until they have a chance to be integrated, and until folks can grasp them at the level of transformation. And for that reason, it's really important to me that the principles be articulated correctly. And so an example of that is, that probably most of you have heard, people are conditioned to say, it's how we are taught to say this, I beat myself up. And you hear it everywhere and you read it everywhere. And I will always, no matter how compelling what the person is saying is, I'll stop the person. I'll just interrupt them to say, you don't beat yourself up. Self-hating voice in your head beats you up, okay? And of course, over the years, I've had a lot of people say, well, that's just semantics. It's the same thing. But it's not. And as soon as we get the difference between those two, we know that not only are they not the same thing, they are so different that the message each one of those gives is so dramatically different that it really is important for us to get that difference. Okay, and so that's the kind of thing that I would like us to focus on today. So if I'm saying I beat myself up, or I'm hearing you don't beat yourself up, the whole underlying principle there is for us as awareness practitioners to be looking at, who are those people? Who are we talking about here? Okay? So who is the I? Who beats up the myself? Who is the myself? Okay? And if I don't beat myself up, then, and a voice is beating me up, who's getting beaten up? That's the kind of thing that we want to get as clear about in practice as we can. And so an example, one of the things that set me off with a desire for this conversation is that people will hear me say, you need to take care of her, or now don't lose sight of him. Okay? And so what I would like us to start off this time with is for you to tell me what you see, what you think I mean when I say that. Okay? So maybe just take a few moments here. We don't want to just jump up into conditioned mind and start thinking about this. So take a minute to look at that. If you hear me say, you and I have had an interaction, and at the end of it, I say, if you're female, you need to take care of her. Don't forget to take care of her. Or if you're male, don't lose sight of him. Don't forget about him. Okay? What do you hear in that? And especially from the perspective that I have just laid out. Okay? So when you feel ready, then if you would star 6, unmute yourself. And again, if you're not the first person and I don't say your name, please star 6 again until that interaction is finished, okay? So who would get us started?
Carolyn.
Hi, this is Tom in Texas.
Okay, I heard Janice and Tom, but I heard somebody before Janice, and I just couldn't tell who it was.
Gabriel?
I think I heard Gabriel, and I think I heard somebody before Gabriel.
Carolyn.
Carolyn. All right, so Carolyn, Gabriel, Janice, and Tom. All right, let me. Well, you'll remember, right? You'll remember which order you're in. All right, Carolyn.
What occurs is that from that place of non-separation, I want to take care of the person who still is under the mistaken identity that she is separate somehow.
Uh-huh. So you hear it as an invitation to come back to center and be aware that there is a person who tends to get put in a position of lack of attention.
Yes, that somehow yes, there's an identity, mm-hmm. a mistaken identity of separation, and from a place of connection, I invite her to be part of that.
Okay, that is the word that you're using there is key. Right, there's separation. There's a belief that there is a someone who is being put in that position, and that when you are not paying attention, you fall for that illusion of separation, and then are treated in a way that is perhaps unkind or just ignored.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, very good. Thank you. Gabriel.
So what I see is we have a pet. His name's Isaiah, and he's a dog. And we have, like, pictures of him, and we refer to him when we talk. But then there's, like, the actual living organism being. And so I think that who Isaiah actually is, or what he is that actual, like, biological organism, the being, the one in the present, not the one in the pictures or the one that people tell stories about, but the actual one in the moment. So if he is hurt or hungry or needs care, to take care of him, the real one, now, not the one that we like to joke about or think about or talk about.
So in other words, what you want to do is be attentive to what's actually going on rather than an idea in your mind. Because Isaiah is an idea in your mind, and if you're constantly relating to that idea in your mind doesn't need to go outside, doesn't need to be fed, doesn't need water, right? So bringing attention to the actual Isaiah is what you want to be relating to. And I'm going to project that there is as much about that process of who lives in a mental relationship with the dog as anything else about that. Okay?
Yeah, good. So it's not just, the living it's biological... Not
just, it's not just the dog.
I was just...
It's who is relating to the dog.
Nice, yes, thank you.
Yeah, yeah, all right. Thank you, Gabriel. Janice.
Hi, Sherry. I think that when I hear something like take care of her or whatever, it with myself, or even when I hear it and you're speaking with somebody else and giving guidance, I relate it to just authentic being. Like inside me, as soon as you say it, whether it's to me or someone else, there's no kind of separation. And it's more like a feeling. I just go to, but that's the authentic. There's that authentic nature. I don't quite know how to say it, but it's like, it's just like emerging. And then there isn't any separation. It's something I don't even have words for.
Okay, this is very helpful, because what you're describing, your predecessors have also been pointing at. So you hear that, and what happens is that you, the person hearing it, dissolve. If that's not too strong a picture there. That
yeah.
Whoever was there a moment before is no longer there. There is awareness of authenticity that's there.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And one big tip off there is we don't have words for it, which is why this conversation we're having this morning is so important to me, because we don't have words for this, and we get tempted to use the same old words, and then mm-hmm. the temptation or the danger, more than a temptation, but the danger is to forget that those same old words don't actually work here.
Right.
Yeah? You with me on that one?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Very
okay,
good. Tom. Thank you, Janice.
So before the recording for this class, there were several players. There was the I, who was the small child that had been
okay,
abandoned
Tom,
or was alone.
Tom,
yes.
Tom,
yes.
Hang on
yes.
just 1 second. I didn't hear what you were saying because there was some technological stuff going on for a second. So start over again, please.
Okay, good. So before the recording... There were several players in the take care of him advice. One was the person that's going to be the caretaker. The other was a small version of the self, the young, small child that was abandoned and alone. And so there was a caretaker and a person or a small boy that was being taken care of. The authenticity that was... really separate, a separate I. And so, but now looking at it from a perspective of there are no players, taking the players out of it, I see the authenticity is all of it.
Yes, which is another critical point. And a big part of my desire for this conversation, which is, what has happened in a lot of this language, people hearing the language of practice, is exactly what you described. People decided that authenticity is a small child, and that their job then would be to take care of that small child. And, of course, that's not where we're going in practice at all. And for the very important reason that is a process that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is really excited about, right? Because it can then masquerade as a small helpless child who needs to be taken care of, and that very quickly translates into do everything the way I want it to be done. You with me on that?
Yes, and great to see.
Yes, yeah, critical to see, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. Because one of the things that we realize in practice, of course, is that when we come to center, there isn't anybody who is in need of anything. that's when it becomes terribly thin, right? Which is, we come to center and there isn't anybody, period, because we are now in a non-separate reality. There isn't a me and a you and a centered me and a needy me or all of that disappears in this here now, in the moment. So, yeah, very helpful. All right, good. Thank you, Tom. Does anybody else have anything about that one before we
This is Ren.
Move along? Ren?
And
okay.
This is Bill.
Helga?
And Diane.
Ren and then Bill and
Diane.
Somebody. Helga. But there was somebody between Bill and Diane. Helga? No? were you before Diane?
I don't know if I was Helga? Before or after. I was somewhere. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll put you right after Diane. How about that? Okay.
Okay.
Ren.
Okay. First of all, this is fascinating and much like diagramming sentences, which you always talk about. But what I
yep.
saw is, say you went to a workshop and they had you do an exercise similar to this. There was a person on the cushion, and then there was a different body, a different human standing, sitting behind the other body, representing, speaking at the person like the voices in their head. So
mm-hmm.
the way that I
mm-hmm.
was looking at it was that's helping to understand what disidentification is. And so then you go to, okay, well, if the person behind is representing the person on the head, the voices in the head, who's on the cushion? And what I was seeing, and I'm not sure, but is just like what's left when you take away the voices. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. Oh, it makes perfect sense, Ren. And that is exactly it. And the point is not to figure it out.
Yeah.
Right? Which is what we're conditioned to do, to figure it out, which again is just that very famous slippery slope into same old, same old. We're right back into ego's view of how things work. What we want to be living in is that question of, so who's here? Right? So,
right.
So okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, as opposed to just using the language, which is really easy to do in an email class, and say, you know, this human, or whatever, and sort of forget, well, who is this human?
Exactly so. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. This is where I always say, I'll say it later. I'll remember. I always say it, Ren, so I'll remember to say it later. Because we're going to specifically address some of those issues, too, as time goes on. So, yeah, that's exactly it. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Bill.
Hi, Sherry. This is what's dropping in for me as we're talking about this is the two-handed recording practice. So
yep.
how I've been practicing with that is let's say I'm going through some moment of suffering. I pull out the recorder and I'm recording in the right hand about that suffering. Then I return to the listening in the left hand. And
mm-hmm.
what often happens in listening in the left hand is that I see that this is this is a suffering story. Not in a harsh way, but this is a suffering story. And
well,
and
Bill,
like,
let me stop you right here. Okay.
Okay.
Let me stop you right here, because that is exactly what I want people to be looking at. Not making a conclusion, but actually asking who, not intellectually, analytically. That's not where we're going. It's a koan approach, right? It's a realization, a recognition that I don't know the answer to this, right? To look at who is making that conclusion. Because that's exactly the kind of place where ego can slide in and make a decision about something. And because we assume we're coming from center, ego gets away with it.
Yes.
And how
that plays out is when we're in the third part of recording back to that, in response to that message, right, is sometimes I'm in the process of trying to help that identity to be comforted. And what I find is sometimes that doesn't help that identity to be comforted. And as I sit with it, sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. And I think,
Bill, let me stop you. Let me stop you right there. Let me stop you right there. Because that's the, very often people will ask me about recording and listening. Well, what if it's ego doing the recording? Or what if it's self-hate? I don't want to, and what I say is, don't worry about it. Just keep doing the process. Keep doing the process, and all of it will become clear to you as you go through the process. But what we don't want to do is draw any conclusions about any of it. So even a decision like sometimes it's helpful and sometimes it's not, this is the crux of it. Helpful to whom? Who decides it's helpful? Who are these people? And so doing a practice like that from the perspective of I want to get a look at who all of these players are, and I want to be, and this is where we often talk about out of the corner of my eye, I want to be keeping an eye on who's keeping an eye on all these folks. Okay.
Yes. So it's
all
becoming
right.
More and more aware of these identities.
That's it. That's exactly it. Until we get to the point where we hear something like, "That's a suffering story," and we get a flag that says, "Well, now who says that? Who says so? Who's decided that? Who's labeled that? Where's that coming from?" And we become curious about it in the same way we're curious about who just received that intuition, who just saw that flag, right? All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Diane.
I'm trying to get out of the story that I'm completely confused. So as I understand it, we're saying that the eyes that we look at, for example, those are just aspects of ego that take us...
No, let me stop you right there.
Okay.
We're not concluding anything. We're not figuring anything out. It's perfectly fine to be confused. I wish everyone in Zen practice were confused most of the time, and watching the confusion, okay? Because then I would get to say to you, what you're seeking is what is able to see the confusion. If the confusion draws us up into conditioned mind, which it's going to do, because that's where confusion lives, in order to try to figure something out, it's got us. So what we want to do is just watch the process. We're just watching the process, just curious, just noticing. So as you know, when I encourage somebody in a meditation practice, I encourage somebody to just sit and relax and breathe and notice. That's how everything will be revealed, because that is not a practice that any ego is ever going to do. Okay? So, hang on.
Okay.
Stay with it. Yep, stay with it. And it is being recorded. It wasn't recorded right from the beginning, but, you know, all of this is being recorded. And so you can listen to the recording again. And as we do that, as we stay with the process, then it becomes clearer, because what's happening to us is that we're dropping down below the level that on which we are used to operating, ego's world. We're dropping down below that, and that's where the transformation is taking place, not in the head. Okay?
Okay, but aren't we talking about a construct that if you see what that's pointing at, it helps you do that? What you were
talking about,
drop below?
In fact, you're really making the connection that I was hoping. See, even though the voice wants to tell you you're confused, you're making the connection that I hope people would make from this. So if you hear me say, don't forget to take good care of her, okay? I'm not encouraging you to become somebody who is going to take good care of her. That's the dangerous place that has resulted from people hearing me say that. They then decide there's a her or a him that they are in charge of taking care of, which takes us back to what we were looking at a little bit ago. Then it's easy for people to think that there is some slightly inadequate me that needs to be, when what I'm actually pointing at is an authentic orientation to life, an authentic incarnation of life that is more like a daffodil or a pine tree than it is like other human beings.
So when you say don't forget to, do you want me to just be quiet and listen to this more later?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
and we can talk about it again. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Diane. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Helga.
Yeah. So for me, what came up was something that you told me one time. You know, I take care of this little boy, and I really have an experience of unconditional love for him. So I know what that feels like. And when you said, you know, it's like that's how you want to relate to yourself, what I realized was that it's so foreign to me to consider that, to be that in tune with myself, because my experience has been basically being led around by ego, you know, who has taken charge of my life. You know, this idea, you know, I mean, I have thought about it a lot, or just, you know, tried to experience that for myself. It's just so foreign to me.
Yes. Well, and Helga, that is exactly it. So again, you're pointing at something really important. So when we start off in practice, you know, a lot of people start off in practice and don't actually even know what compassion is. You know, they might think it's pity or sympathy or whatever it is. But non-separate reality is not most people's definition of compassion. Okay? And so there's an image like that. So you know what unconditional love feels like. Okay? You to a lesser degree, you take this little boy personally. Okay, you don't you would never let ego hold him to the standards that you let ego hold you to.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
And so that's the movement that's being described in that. Ego has you convinced that you need to take Helga personally and that you need to look to conditioned mind in order to know how to treat her so that she will be the person that she should be. And what we're really going for is for you to take to not take personally Helga the way you don't take personally that little boy. So we're not moving to a place of from self-hate for Helga to unconditional love for Helga. What we're moving from is self-hate to unconditional love. So we're taking Helga out of the mix.
Yeah, so yeah. Where the only thing that's left is that experience, like whether
it's the unconditional
love,
the
little boy,
exactly,
or
so.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
right. And
yeah,
so it, yeah, so what we're talking about is a continuum, right? And they are stages of practice. They
yeah,
absolutely are. And so the difficulty that I have run into, and that I hope to clarify with people, is that when somebody who is new to practice hears me talk to somebody who has been practicing for 20 years, they're going to hear what I'm saying to that old timer through the lens of where they are currently in practice, and which ego is excited about, right? Because, again, that takes a person to confusion. And so that's...
Yeah, and you know, and what you were just saying, I think, you know, it can create, it's like, it creates a separation, you know, between the person that
that's
takes
right,
care or has the unconditional love and the person that person. So there's that.
That's exactly right.
You know,
that's
yeah,
exactly right. Yes, which is
yeah,
why the whole bottom line of this is, who are these people? Right? Because when you see that, you see him, you see her, you see the voice, you see the compassion, you see the loving kindness, you see the, you know, now instead of thinking that there's any kind of an understanding about this, and you know who is talking about what, now you're going to really be questioning. Instead of look over there, you're going to be looking at who's saying look over there. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Helga.
Thanks.
All right. Okay. So the next one of these that I would like to speak to, it was just, I think it was Ren who just mentioned it for us, but people have, and I honestly don't know where people came up with this one, okay, because to the best of my knowledge, this is something I have never done. All right, but people have developed a habit of speaking about themselves in the third person. So I would say, you would hear me say, so I know Sherry is the kind of person who would never cheat on her taxes. Now, to the best of my ability, again, I've never said anything like that in my life. If you've heard me, I was, you know, it was in my drug days, or I was having a moment of unconsciousness. And because, as we've been talking about, that really begs the question, who is that? Who would that be? Who is talking about Sherry? And I hope you can get a sense of how under the radar that person could remain, because the assumption is that that's center, or that's some sort of authenticity that is able to see Sherry as accurately, see Sherry accurately, okay? And the other one that goes along with this, and I'm going to ask you to, you know, because some people will relate to one and some to the other, but the other one is the habit of talking about oneself as this person or this human being. Okay? Now, again, if I say I'm talking to you and I say, well, what's really important to this human being? Well, who said that? And who is that human being? And again, I hope you can get a sense of how that whole process can get accepted, because again, there's an assumption that the person speaking is speaking from center or from authenticity and has a clear-eyed view of this person or this being or this human being. Okay? So so again, maybe if take a minute to see where you are with that. And what not yet. to look and see, to really break it down in the way that I just have, and that if you use that language or you hear that language, what do you see when you look at? What do you see when you people? You need to star six, okay? Please. We have an expression: urgency is not our friend, and it really isn't. So what do you see about who you assume is talking and who is being talked about in either of those, whether it's talking about that person in the third person or talking about that person as this person or this human being or this being, okay? All right, so... who would get us started?
Sherry, could you repeat that more succinctly?
Could I repeat it more succinctly?
Yeah, I think I missed the essence of the question.
Well, the essence of the question is, if you do any of those, if you talk about yourself in the third person, or if you have a habit of referring to yourself as this person or this being or this human being, when you look at that, when you stop and look at that, who do you think is talking in that case, and who is being talked about? Okay. Who would get us started?
This is Rochelle.
This is Sherry.
Brian.
Rochelle. And then I heard somebody, and then Brian. So who's that somebody after Rochelle?
Nancy.
Mary? Nancy. Okay. And then Brian. And give me one more person.
Sherry?
Carol.
Yeah. Carol. Ashwini, am I hearing you? I must be hearing voices. I thought somebody was trying to. Somebody was
Sherry,
referring to me as Sherry.
Well, yes, no.
Oh,
I
it
think
is you.
Sherry. No. It wasn't me. I just came on. I think the person was Sherry.
Oh. It was Sherry. All
okay,
right.
Yeah.
Where did Sherry fit into our lineup?
Before Carolyn.
Before Carol. Didn't I hear Carol or Carolyn?
I think I heard Carolyn.
Well,
it
Nancy
was Carol.
I think it was after Nancy.
Yes,
okay,
Nancy, Sherry, and Carol.
Okay, Nancy, Sherry, and Carol. Okay, I got it. If I don't, well, we'll rectify it in a bit. Rochelle.
Hi. At least for me, a quick question. When I use she or her, I use it very specifically when I'm identified as a technique to disidentify. And I record and, you know, try to tell the story so that I'm disidentified from that, to put distance in the story. But I generally don't use that. Is that the instance that you're talking about?
So you would be, so you're upset about something, and
yes.
And you're talking about her being upset.
Yes, as a technique to disidentify from.
Yeah,
the,
I got that part. But I got
yeah.
that part. But my encouragement would be to let, in quotes, her talk.
Okay.
Yeah, because again, it's who wants to disidentify. Who wants to talk about her in order to disidentify?
Okay, okay. And so,
again, yeah. Let me just clarify that a little bit, right? Because the danger in that is that ego. Of course, ego learns all these techniques, right? Learns all of this, the lingo, the jargon, the everything. And
yes,
so,
ma'am, it does.
as we noticed, one of the reasons that the two-handed recording came about was that people realized in recording and listening that, say, I'm upset about something, okay? And so I pick up the recorder and I'm talking into the recorder. And in that fast, I, center, comes in to say, oh, well, you know, that's just so-and-so. You're just, you know, you're just identified with. And so ego has actually learned to be the disidentified voice of center, which is really aimed at shutting that person up and not staying with the experience to be able to watch that whole experience and have the insights that would drop in through really staying with an experience.
Aha. So that would explain some those episodes where it just seemed to fall apart and not really do anything.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And course, Rochelle, you know, we're really used to being shut up. Right.
Yeah.
So if we have, you know, a centered voice, the Buddha now tells you to shut up. Well, we're used to going along with it, but we don't want to do that. Go ahead.
So would it be accurate to say, make sure I'm tracking here, that the that there is the staying with the experience, and there's somebody commenting about the experience, but
that's right.
And looking at the process, but there is an overall presence that's kind of watching all of it from a place of authenticity or center.
Well, here's the Rochelle. I would hesitate to label that.
Okay. Okay.
So
just question it.
That's right. Because you're in a very subtle place, I'm going to give you an even more subtle place. Okay. So there you are in that process. You're staying with the experience of this person who's being upset and okay, and there's a commentary going on in the background, and you're aware of that. How are you aware of that awareness?
Aha.
That's where we want to be looking.
Oh my gosh, it's kind of like static and. It's like static in the brain. It just shuts down all of it, and it kind of like, ooh, who's that?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's like a Cohen.
Yeah. Yeah, it is exactly. It is exactly that. Yeah. Thank you, Rochelle.
Thank you.
I love that Zen shutdown of the mind. It's one of the most wonderful places to be as soon as we get used to it. All right, Nancy.
This is fun. I remember a saying when I was growing up, I think my uncle would say, who's that? And then say, that? Well, who's that who's saying who's that?
That's
and when
right.
If you apply it to yourself,
that's right.
It's like, this is fun. Well,
yeah.
what you were pointing to with Rochelle is exactly what I was looking at. And that was, well, I kind of remember when all this started, when people were feeling well, saying I or me, and we're going, well, who's I, who's me? And then this, then we started talking about ourselves in the third person. I mean, I'm just trying to think back on how this evolved. And for me, I realized that when I was doing that, there was no difference in saying I or me, but except that I would get tripped up in the words, you know.
Well, Nancy, yeah. thank you for that. This is where, remember a minute ago I said I was going to, I'll say what I always say, and you put your finger right on it. Okay, so in the 60s or 70s or whenever the heck it was, people got the idea that should was a bad thing. Don't should on yourself. Don't should on others. Right. And so all the woke people started not saying should.
Right.
But should didn't go away. It's just nobody said it. And because people weren't saying it, they didn't notice that they were doing it.
Exactly.
And that is exactly the same process. So I don't say I any longer. And I have all of these workarounds so the I can just remain completely hidden, out of sight, as I goes about its business, unnoticed and uninterfered with.
Yes, and using this person, to me, you know, when I looked at it, it was the same way as my using I or me or whatever. So,
yes, except there's an impression that something else is going on. This is not just ego. And we're not talking about ego here. We're talking about this person. Or we're talking about this being. Yeah? But are we really talking about this being, a la the daffodil in the pine tree? Or are we talking about something else here? Yeah.
Well, it's all right.
Thank you, Nancy.
It really begs to take a look. Right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm hoping we're all going to be scrutinizing like crazy here.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Brian. No, I'm sorry. Sherry.
Hi. I should have said SRB. Hi.
Yes, if you said SRB, I'd have got you in a second.
I know. I'm so bamboozled by all the names. I'm so grateful because when I listened to the recording yesterday, it was like stupid dust for me. And what's happening right now is I'm seeing exactly what you guys were just talking about, that there was a I shouldn't use the word I. And then when it did get replaced, there was a bamboozle of that, almost like, oh, this is authenticity talking, you know, and that's what I'm hearing, I think. Please help me make sure, but that's the real trick. At least when we're saying I, we know what's going on.
Well, or we have a chance, right?
Right.
At least we're going to, hopefully we're going to be saying, which I, right? Which I is it? So I've been looking at this, you know, this little thing lately. I said to somebody the other day, you know, there are only two places that we can be, here or ego. That's it. And so when I say I, and I'm talking about how annoyed I am with huh-huh, or how excited I am with huh-huh, or how whatever it is, then if I'm tuned into, I'm excited about the trip that I'm going to go on when the pandemic ends. Notice how I slid that in there. Okay. A lot of people are traveling now, which is quite alarming to me. I'm really excited about that. Well, am I here? Because if not, then that's a clue for me that this might not be authenticity. This might not be center. Could be.
Aha.
But I want to be open to the possibility that I could be identified with ego, so that when I start yelling at you a minute from now for interrupting my plans, I have a little bit of conscious awareness that, huh, maybe I wasn't quite as centered as I thought I was?
Yeah. One quick question, and then I'll hop off because I know there's a lot of people. But what just went through my mind is it possible to talk about our experience and be in authenticity?
Of course, center can talk all the time. You know, it's what, do you happen to like Zen poetry at all?
I do.
Yeah. Well, that's what that is. You like Rumi or Hafiz or folks like that?
Yes.
A little Mary Oliver thrown in for somebody who's modern. The reason that we send out quotes is that people will often read a quote and it takes them to exactly the place that we're talking about. Because it has what is said has been said from center, and it and what resonates is center.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anytime you know something, I was just this is the one that dropped in, but the "I Have a Dream" speech by Martin Luther King Jr.
Yep.
You know, why do people respond to that? Well, because they go right to where he was in saying that, and there's the resonance.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Steve Gusho.
Yeah. Gusho to you. Brian.
So this is great. The first thing that just dropped in, look at it, was, if I refer to myself as this human or what this human needs, is that the process is it gets called disidentifying, but I'm actually separating from
that's right
the horrible needy thing there that's unspeakably difficult. So I can speak about it.
That's right. And Brian, let me just ask you this: it can go in two directions, right? So if I'm talking about what this human being needs, it can go in two directions. It can either be disgusting and rejected, or it can be really legitimate and heartfelt and must be granted.
Yes, I think I'm not sure if you're pointing at like that the I identity can use that either way, or if that there's actually
right.
The language is so iffy, there's also a way of actually addressing it from stepping out from inside the story.
Well, and of course, you know, in awareness practice, we're not actually trying to address anything.
Yeah.
We're just bringing awareness to what it is. So in a situation like that, you know, people can stay stuck for a lifetime. Now, is this a legitimate need that I really need to have fulfilled? And how am I going to do that? Or then somebody says, well, actually, you know, the needs that we have are for food and water and sleep and shelter. So anything else is a want. And now ego is really flummoxed there because, well, then how do I as ego get all of my ego needs met under this new language structure?
Right. Yeah, that sounds like...
And so,
yeah.
Yeah, and so what we're really doing is just, again, asking that question. So when I hear something like somebody talking about my needs, do I fall for, this must be legit because, you know, I do have needs, or does it flag me that, you know, somebody talking about what this human being needs, that could be a bit of a bamboozle. Let's look into that. Yeah.
Yeah, it just seems like an avoiding of the pain is what's being pointed at when I'm doing that, which
you're right. Well, and even a belief in pain. Who is saying there's pain? Who is that?
Yeah.
Who is the me who is having pain. So if we do something like the two-handed recording, then we start, you know, that's offered as one of those steps back, right? So let that person talk, and you know, it's not a let that person say what he has to say once, and then let's make a decision about whether he really is in pain and we need to address this or not. You know, this could be a very long process of getting through that conversation to what's going on there. So, and it's not just him who's in pain, but who is listening to that? Who is deciding about that? Now we're back to Rochelle.
Yeah.
With the, there's the awareness of the awareness. Right? That's where we're headed, not in figuring out the actual right person to be and the right way to live.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Have fun.
You too.
All right. Carol.
Hi. What I was going to say is already said. I'll just admit that I'm really lost.
Well, but
not
you
in a
haven't
bad way.
Said it. You haven't
okay,
said
well,
it.
Okay,
so.
Well, it was about disidentification, and but I love what you said after it, which is that voice that shuts up that person, and that's I got that just opened everything up for me right there. That there's only a few people that really get to come to the microphone, and so when this other person comes up, they often get shut off real quickly. Like, oh, you know, that is so depressing. Don't talk about that. Or, you know, this is really dreary. Who wants to hear it? Just don't listen to it. So when that person finally comes, it's something much, you know, that's been hidden for so long comes out, and I guess acceptance happens. Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, that's one of those very tricky chicken and egg places, right? So are you in acceptance, and that's how that happened? Is it that happens and that moves you to acceptance? Were you already in acceptance, but it happened, and therefore you became aware of the acceptance? You know, these are really, beautiful, rich, exciting places to be. And what you're describing in that process, of course, is the layers and layers and layers and layers and layers and layers and layers, and layers of keep her from ever getting there.
Mm.
Yeah, because what would happen, Carol? What would happen if every single thing about you were acceptable?
Oh, that's mind-blowing.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure the universe would collapse in on itself, right?
Absolutely.
And certainly the universe of ego would collapse in on itself.
Well, yeah.
And it points this so beautifully to me, to the place of, now, I think you are a person who should be and wants to be compassionate to all. Is that true?
Should be. I should be compassionate to all?
Uh-huh.
I don't know what that means. Yes, I have a lot of shoulds. I operate on a lot of shoulds.
Well, yeah, but I mean, isn't that part of what your orientation to life is? You know that you need to have compassion for all.
Oh, yes,
don't
definitely.
You?
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so then, of course, it just opens a huge floodgate of information about how you're not that and when you're not that and exactly. Yeah. Okay. And we're only doing this because you're every person in this. Okay. We are all exactly here. Right. So you should be compassionate to all. And the way to get there is through withholding compassion from you.
Ooh.
Right.
Wow.
So you will basically be beaten into being corrected such that you will be the person you should be.
Oh, yes, that's the process.
Mm-hmm. You'll be judged and punished until finally you're perfect.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's a great
One of my favorite Zen sayings is one process does not lead to another.
Yeah.
Right? Gandhi said it so perfectly. You know, the only way to cure hate is with love. I think Jesus mentioned that and a few other people. Okay? So realizing the truth of that, then what we begin to close in on, and the importance of what we're looking at today, is the realization that what's really going on with this is ego fighting to maintain that position of, I am the authentic being place in our lives.
Wow, yeah. Oh, boy.
I know.
This is pretty mind-blowing.
It is totally mind-blowing, and that's good because we want the mind blown. It's really completely unnecessary. It's beyond overrated. And so what we're really doing is moving past it, right? Which is why we don't want to get stuck anywhere. We don't want to get hung up on anything. And the fastest way, of course, to get hung up is to believe that ego is who we are, which is, as you and probably most people on this call know, is one of my great obsessions. The hardest part of practice is to realize that ego is not you, is not me.
Right. Well, thank you for all this help in clarifying this, moving through it.
You're welcome. Go happy, huh?
Thank you. You too.
Can't wait to get that recorder and start going in a different direction with it. Right? Absolutely. Egg those people on. Should I stop talking about this? Do you want me to stop talking about this? Is this just too depressing for you, ego? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is my life, is who I am, just too upsetting for you, ego? Can you just not deal with it? Perhaps you could go away. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Carol.
Good. Thank you. Bye.
All right. So one place here, and we've kind of already looked at this, but just to reinforce it. Let's go with the one Carol and I were just talking about. In fact, that's a really interesting one. So when I say, or you hear me say, that's not you, that's ego. Okay, what does that mean? That's not you, that's ego. And one that that I hear that goes along with it, that's sort of a new iteration in our practice, is I'll hear people say, ego got angry. Or conditioning got really upset. Okay, so maybe take a couple of minutes to look at that. Ego really doesn't like it that, or I'm conditioned, blah, 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 okay? And then you hear, that's not you, that's ego. Okay, anybody want to tackle that one?
Mark?
Sharon, were you after Mark?
I think so.
Andrea. Okay.
And Gabriel.
Andrea. Gabriel, I'm going to go to somebody else since we already got to hear from you.
Okay.
Jan. Andrea, and then who is it?
Jan.
Jan, and I think I heard Rebecca. So
that's somewhere in there.
let's go with this, and then we'll see if we have time for some more folks. All right, Mark.
Well, I know I want to speak to this, but I'm not too sure how to say it. It's kind of like this human thing as well. I think that when you say that's not you, that's ego,
mm-hmm.
you're pointing to the fact that I'm in a place other than center.
That's right. That's
and,
right. Ego and has taken over and is using your mouth to further its ambition.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
And when I refer to this human, I'm referring to like a body that has organs and a little bit of hair on his head.
Right, but
and,
but Mark, let me stop you right there, because
okay.
what would be the point of that? Because of course I would suggest that that's not at all what you're referring to. It's that place that I often kid people about. So you have some sort of a medical condition. And how much of that body would you be willing to have removed if you could stay alive? And people realize that they could do without darn near everything in the pursuit of staying alive. So you're not actually talking about the body.
Well,
even if we go back to Gabriel's dog, we're not actually talking about a physical form. We're talking about what we're trying to indicate is the life force that animates that, the intelligence that animates that form, right? Which is why I like to compare us to daffodils and pine trees, right? So there's a sense of an aliveness, a living that is in a human being, right? Which points us to the authenticity. And of course, I'm not saying that there isn't authenticity. I'm not saying that. I'm only asking people to question who purports to be able to speak for that and about that. Because authenticity,
okay.
I don't know of anyone who has ever said, this is authenticity speaking. Right?
Right.
Yeah. And anybody who tried to do that would get laughed off the stage, right? Just like you did. You know, I am the centered self. We go, really? Why are you saying that? And who are you really?
Okay, I'm not so sure I was, well, maybe I wasn't and wasn't realizing it. I wasn't thinking I was saying the centered self.
Right, and I was encouraging you, to consider that that's what's behind that, that you're not actually talking about a body, a lump of cells and that sort of thing when you talk about this being.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me
start right.
that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Thank you, Mark. Sharon.
Yeah, I'm not responding to that, but what you said earlier about that's not you. It's beating you up. Because one time I said to you that that's a system, and you said, well, yes, that's a program. So I think of if I'm getting beaten up, it's getting beaten up by the conditioning that I've had, all the conditioned thoughts over the years and through my program.
Egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's what
it comes to you via a voice in your head.
Right. Well, sometimes I can be feeling real bad and I'm thinking, I know that voice is saying something, but I'm not sure what it is.
Okay, so Sharon, you're putting your finger right on it.
I'm hoping people will do is begin to question the process that they're using to know something. Yeah. Because the I who is looking, speaking, is often unnoticed. So I know I feel bad. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Okay. And so to notice that as a process, not as a problem to be solved.
Well, you want to solve it, though, because you don't want to feel bad. And so you think, well, let's see if I can just get
Sharon,
those words
Sharon,
out.
Sharon, that, no, you don't. You might in some places, but in Zen awareness practice, you don't. Because what we are going for is a clarity in which we do not suffer. We are not solving issues to avoid suffering. If we go down that path, ego has us, because it has an endless list. It's the other side of the you can't. It's the other side of the negation, in the sense that the duality is you can't, you must. So if you do this, if you do, you know, if we talk about this regularly, you know, no, if you cancel that commitment, that is not going to end your suffering. No, it's not. And that's what's being pointed at here. When we go to that ego system to come up with what the problem is and what the solution is, and we're not looking at that process, then all we're doing is furthering conditioning, furthering ego's agenda.
Yeah, I can see that.
Okay.
Right. Thank you very much.
Okay, good. Very good.
Okay.
You are so welcome. Thank you.
All right.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Andrea.
Hi. Well, a lot's coming up. I don't know if I can say this in any kind of coherent way, but... Well, the first thing that dropped in was, I think there's some languages that don't have I in it.
We don't need to worry about them. If they don't have it, then they I can promise you, if they're human beings, they have their own set of problems.
Yeah. And then the other thing that you already talked about was... I guess I could see ego coming in now and saying authentic nature feels this way. And
yeah.
Ego,
oh, like, good, good. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's exactly what I'm hoping people will be examining. It's like, who said that? Who knows that? Who even has that as an issue? Not authentic nature.
Yeah, so that's what, and then also just, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you know if it's authentic. I guess you don't know if it's authentic nature or ego sometimes. I mean, it seems like ego.
All the time, Andrea, all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, all the time. And again, this is the salient piece of this. Only ego cares. Only ego wants to get it right. Only ego wants to know. Right?
Yeah. Oh,
the,
yeah.
The daffodil does not have the weather app. Okay? Yeah. The pine tree isn't concerned about global climate change. Now, I'm sure I just set off a bunch of people with that. Well, but don't we have to? Okay, don't go there. All I'm saying is that process that wants to know is the problem, is the cause of suffering.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, I know I live in, am I doing it right no matter what I do?
Yes. That's back to Carol, right? It's going to hate you into being the correct, compassionate, loving person.
Right.
Yeah.
So if I'm doing it correctly, you're just stepping back from that. And can I ask one other thing? Because there is this part that's dropped in, which will be, who's here now?
Well, you know, like, if that becomes an intellectual exercise, then yeah. that's going to go the route of all of these other things. It's meant to be a looking out of the corner of your eye.
Interesting. All right, that's really, really helpful because I can see it going either way. So that's really helpful.
Yep. Thank you for bringing that up. That's very good. And you might have saved us from another of these conversations with that.
I hope so.
Thank you. Thanks, Andrea. Jan.
Hi. Gosh, I don't know that I have anything to add, but or there are a lot of questions, but that's what I love about this is that what I'm getting is that what you're pointing to are the processes that go on, and that when you say to us or we say ask our, you know, that's not you, because I'm beginning to hear that when I'm alone, that's not you. And it's pointing to the process that we got stuck in of that self-hating habit, that egocentric karmic conditioning is always offering at hand.
Yes.
Is that what you're, and so what I love about what
well,
you're saying,
Jan,
yeah?
if I may, if what you're describing is you're all by yourself, but you realize in your head you're in a conversation about something that's not there. You know, you're listening to or solving a problem that doesn't exist, whatever it is, that realization that, wait a minute, that's ego. That's not
yeah.
you. And then there again is it brings us back, but not to figure anything out. It brings
right.
us back to presence, and then what we're practicing is staying here, not going off to the next ego bamboozle.
Right. And what I'm noticing for myself as we're having this conversation is when you say, and then who asked that, and who asked that, is the tendency, the habit of wanting to go up into my head
yes.
to see
and
that.
And figure it out.
No.
Yes.
It's just to drop into the body, to be, as we keep talking about, especially recently, that practice of being, just being here in all
yes.
in all the ways we experience that.
Yeah. Yes. So to go with that, so you and I are in a conversation, and I say to you, well, you know, who said that? And
mm-hmm.
for you to go... That it's kind of code, isn't it? At a certain point in practice, you go, I think that was a hint that maybe that's not me, that's ego. Right? And so it's like listening to or reading a quote. You know, suddenly you're here.
Yes.
And you can feel the difference between those two places. Now, as you say, if you go up into conditioned mind to figure out what happened right there and which one of those was the, then you're gone again. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because
mm-hmm.
if you're gutsy, you'll say something else, and I'll say, well, who said that? All right? And in practice, you know, if we stay with it, if we don't listen to ego say, she is so mean and picky, and I like to talk to these Zen teachers who just tell me what a wonderful job I'm doing all the time. If we don't go that route, then we have a chance over and over and over to see what ego is, what happens when ego is called out, what happens when, and we get to see ego in all these different guises, and we're watching its bamboozles. And what we can cling to as we're going through this is, that's not me. So I don't need
yeah.
to feel bad about what it's doing. I don't need to engage with it. I don't need to take it on. I don't need to protect it. I don't need to hide from it. I don't need to hide it from anybody else. That has nothing to do with me.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, thank you mm-hmm. for all of this. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Rebecca.
Yeah. So what I wanted to talk about was that process. When you say, that's not you, that's ego, what mm-hmm. it can, how it can be interpreted is just like what's been saying, it gets interpreted by conditioned mind into a personal trying then not to be the ego, which is what we've been talking about.
You can stop at interpreting.
Right,
because you're already gone.
Yeah. Yes.
It gets interpreted there.
Yeah.
So that's the same as I go up into conditioned mind too. Okay. Well, there. you can just stop right there. Because if you see that, if you realize that, there it is. Now we're back with Jan, or way back with Rochelle. Well, how did you see that?
Yes.
Did you see that it's being interpreted? Because if you did, then you're not part of that process. You are only able to see that process from awareness. If you don't see the process, then you're identified with ego.
Yes. Well, and here's another way that I see it. It's kind of what you and Jan were just talking about. So when I'm reading, when a tweet will come through, or let's say a Daily Peace quote, let's use a tweet. I'll read the tweet, and I can see by the reaction. It can be either just like, or it's not a open-hearted receiving or whatever. You know, there's an awareness that's not you, that's ego that's reading that. I get that information just by the awareness of the response.
That's it. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. it. That's exactly so. Because where attention is on the awareness, not on what ego is doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just to make the connection with something you said today and in the recording, that there are really only ever two places, here or ego. And when you say that's not you, that's ego, what you're really saying is get here, you know, so drop it, or, you know, just the information that you're not here. And so that looping it around to the interpretation is just the staying in the ego.
That is correct, yes. And so what we get to finally in practice is, and you hear it all the time, so people have that moment of realizing, I have been identified and now I'm here. And they laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They just laugh because the switch is so dramatic mm-hmm. and it's so happy to be present, right? And that's mm-hmm. that's what we're learning to do. That's we're learning to watch for the identification, because we would so much rather be here where happiness resides. Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Phil?
Yeah.
Anna?
Actually, I think we are at close enough to time that I'm not going to ask anybody else, except I'm going to ask Ashwini. If she has anything for us at this time. Phil and Anna, I'll get you next time, okay?
So, Sherry, this is one of the points. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're soft, but I'm going to turn you up.
Okay. Well, one of the things that we were looking at in that last interaction about that's not you, that's ego, is how often the identification with ego is more real than the identification with what's not ego.
Yes, it's more familiar.
Right, and that part mm-hmm. of why this exploration is so important is, so let's just say I'm identified and I'm interacting with you, and I say I'm angry and I'm contracted and I'm not gonna whatever, what's going on for me is who I identify with as who I am. And the exploration and encouragement to step out of that process with that's not you, that's ego, get here, is to switch the attention to awareness, and these are words, to identify with the awareness as what is, not the ego as what I am. And so to when we talk about ourselves in the third person, or we refer to ourselves as human beings, or we're not conscious that I'm in a process that is defining who I am, then actually what we're training ourselves to do is not identify with the intelligence that animates as the awareness that is aware. And that's the big danger of what we're pointing at, that it becomes easier to identify with ego than it is to and feel the reality of it, rather than the other experience that we're always having, because awareness always is, and not choosing to say that's what this is. That's what is me.
Yes. Yes.
I am life. I mean, it's very hard for us to say that because it's not a familiar identification.
Well, and of course, I don't think I would ever say I am life. Life is. And so, you know, the distressing part of this for ego and why it so desperately doesn't want people to do this process is that we're actually not taking a human being personally to the point of erasure. Right? That it, moving to a place of actually losing oneself in the crowd, that there is such a loss of identification with a separate self, that there is only one's only experience is of life living. Is that where you were headed?
Yes, I think what you're saying, right, Sherry, is that the ego's fear is the loss of individuality. But pointing to is that the loss of individuality is the only way we can experience the entirety of all that is as the, however, whatever words we use, which is the individual, right? Because my only experience of all that is from here. But it's not a personal identification. That's all that's being surrendered in the loss of ego.
Yes, and one final way of describing that is that everything we value and want and treasure in life comes from life. It is an experience of conscious, compassionate awareness. It's an experience of presence, of a non-separation from that which animates everything. It's the happiness. It's happiness, joy, bliss, contentment, peace. It's all of those things that we love. What ego says is, if you do these things, if you be this way, you will have happiness and joy and bliss and contentment and peace and satisfaction. Okay? No, you won't. Because as soon as we go down that track, we have just closed ourselves off. We have left a non-separate reality to move into a separation that will prevent us ever from having what we authentically are. And that's the reason that the focus constantly is on dropping the ego. The ego is only an illusion that we are separate from life. And so all of this is in aid of realizing that what we are is the awareness that is aware. And that, in fact, that is our constant, non-stop experience. And the ego that we think is who we are is an overlay. Okay? It is a process that comes in behind every moment of life unfolding and says, not that, me. Okay? And so Zen awareness practice is a process of assisting us to recognize and then realize the difference between those two, to recognize what's there always always, what is our constant underlying experience, and to begin to see that this ego is nothing but an overlay on what is, and a very unhappy, unpleasant overlay at that. All right. Well, that's it for this. You know, I hope we can continue the conversation, and just we'll just get clearer and clearer and clearer. And if more stuff comes up and we want to have another one of these conversations, you can just know that I would be absolutely willing, because it's very fun to spend time with folks in this way. So thank you very much. Please go happy, and take good care of yourself.